a lot of thought put in all these passages today that can create a lot of thought in us so that we can progress in our faith. But the central theme of today's readings is the necessity for trusting faith in God's promises and vigilant preparedness as the followers of Christ. And our first reading today is from Wisdom. And the book of Wisdom was written about a century before the coming of Jesus by a Jew. And one of his purposes was to bolster the faith of fellow Jews living in a world indifferent and sometimes hostile to their beliefs. And a favorite theme of the writer is how the providence of God has protected the chosen people throughout history, especially during the time of their enslavement in Egypt and during the exodus from there under Moses. Like those Jewish slaves in Egypt, we too have been called to cling to the hope of a future that may seem too good to be true. And we too are expected to be steadfast in our faith, even when we see no signs of the fulfillment of God's promises. Today's second reading passage is taken from the end of the letter to the Hebrews. It contains the only explicit definition of faith in the Bible. Faith is a realization of what is hoped for and evidence of things not seen. Like our first reading, the letter in the Hebrews was trying to bolster the faith of the Jewish Christians, and by appealing to the example of their ancestors who had believed in promises yet to be fulfilled. And the chief example of strong faith is found in their patriarch Abraham. Abraham heard the voice of God calling him to a new land and promising him that his descendants would form a great nation. Abraham was also willing to sacrifice his son Isaac to be obedient to God. And such a beautiful example of faith. By the time Luke wrote his gospel, the church was facing the challenge of learning to live with what seemed to be the absence of Christ, the absence of that single clear guiding voice for God's people. The new kingdom had clearly been promised. It had clearly been revealed the kingdom is Christ. It is of his design, and it would be through merits that it would come to be. But at the same time, it was becoming clear that much of the building of it was not going to be by his hand. Rather, it would be slowly built by the patient, conscious effort of the people over the generations of time. The part of Jesus' discourse bounces out what he had said a few verses earlier about not worrying. In those verses, he instructed his listeners not to fret about worldly concerns, but to trust in God's providence. But he knows that some people will tend to turn that invitation into an excuse for laziness and irresponsibility. So now he shows us the other side of the coin. You also must be prepared, he tells his followers. Like servants standing ready for the return of their master at any minute. We can't cram for life's final exam. If we want to live in communion with God forever, to experience the fulfillment he promises in this life and the next, we need to make friendship with God the number one priority of our lives. The good things of this earthly life, its pleasures, challenges, and occupations, will come to an end when the Master returns. To live as they were going to last forever, therefore, is foolish. Christ wants to make sure we don't act like fools. Jesus finishes his parable by telling us that much will be required of the person entrusted with much, and still more will be demanded of the person entrusted with more. With this, he teaches us that every human life is a task, a mission to know, love, and serve God in a unique way. Our lives will take on true meaning to the extent that we carry out that task and fulfill that mission, and to the extent that our treasure, what we most value and desire, consists not in the passing pleasures of this life, but in discovering and fulfilling the supernatural task and mission. So how can we live to be always ready? If we wait for that great occasion to love, we'll be waiting forever. However, we all have countless opportunities to prepare our hearts for a definitive meeting with the merciful heart of Christ. The key is to learn to do ordinary things with extraordinary love. With that in mind, we ask ourselves, what sacrifices can I make so that others don't have to sacrifice? Maybe it's as simple as volunteering to fill an hour at the Adoration Chapel or some church ministry. Maybe it's cooking a meal for someone. Maybe it's turning off TV and spending time with family. Pick something simple and stick to it. We die as we live, and if we live choosing to love others, death will simply be what Pope Francis once described as the ultimate come. Shortly, the preparation of the altar will begin, and Father Cody will receive the gifts of bread and wine and bring them to the altar. These gifts carry with them our whole lives. We bring them to God so that they will be transformed into the body and blood of Jesus Christ. In other words, there's a preparation of the altar before the consecration, and our lives are also meant to be an altar of praise to God, an altar prepared and made holy right here in the Mass. In the Mass, we receive the strength and the courage to live always ready. In the Mass, we receive the assurance that God is close to us and that He wants to help us to truly love. And in the Mass, we are brought into unity with others, and we recognize that they are worthy of our love and sacrifice. Today, Christ prepares us for that day, known only to God, when we will go home to meet Him face to face. Mary, Queen of Peace.